Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Do You Want to Be a Wrestler Kid with Bo James. Some people like to call me the King of King Sports. Some people like to call me the King of the Mountains. And some people like to call me names I will not repeat here, but that's all right. Glad that you have joined me for this podcast. And if you have followed me in the past, you know that this is my third go around with a podcast. I had given up on doing one of my own in the past because it was just kind of time consuming to record around other people's schedules with everything that I've got going on. I also always felt that I am a better interview than I am interviewer. But every time that I'm on Between the Sheets or Randy Hales' Memphis Memories podcast or Booking the Territory with Mike Mills or John McAdams' podcast or other ones that I've done in the past, people always hit me up on social media wanting to know when I am going to do my own podcast. And it just keeps occurring each time that I'm a guest on someone else's podcast. So we're going to do it again right here. We're going to do it a little different. This go around, it mostly will be me by myself telling you stories. If you'll give me 30 minutes or so each week, I will try my best to educate and entertain you on the world of professional wrestling. Also, I'm working on doing a Patreon where I take a deep dive on a subject for 90 minutes to 2 hours each month. That way, I can educate you and entertain you just a little bit more on subjects that I'm well-versed on. Plus, I can have special guests on there with me, and we're still working on that, so I will update you about that right here next week. Before we get into the subject of this show this week, I want to make sure that I mention it is a special week for my family here, as not only my great-nephew Waylon, if you follow me on social media, you see the Daily Dose of Waylon every day. My little nephew Waylon turns 2 years old this week, and his cousin and my grandniece, the little princess herself, Aubrey Rose, turns 1 year old this week. So it's a great time for my family. What I want to talk to you about this week is characters that I have known along the years in professional wrestling. And I could do who knows how many weeks just on the different kind of characters that I've met in professional wrestling. And I'm not talking about, as they say today, the in-ring character or he's playing his character. I'm talking about guys that were real characters inside and outside the ring, walking, talking cartoons, if you will. Guys that could tell stories and entertain you in the dressing room and in the car, who had this special charisma, had this special, just something special about them that drew people to them. And, you know, and most of these guys that I'm going to talk about coming up, and we're going to pick out three of them right here today that I knew pretty well in my years in wrestling and who were special parts of my life. But, you know, they were great storytellers, and we're going to revisit some audio here in a few minutes of one of them telling some stories, and that guy's name is Terry Sims, better known as the Beauty, Terry Garvin. I first met Terry in 1989 when he was wrestling for Continental Championship Wrestling, well, at that time, Continental Wrestling Federation, and when they would come to Johnson City and I was always helping out Ron West and selling programs or pictures or doing whatever, I would help put the pink mat on the ring for Terry Garvin before he came out because the Beauty refused to wrestle on the mat that the other wrestlers would roll around and sweat on because his interview was that he had seen the kind of ugly women that they went out with and dated and he had seen them chewing tobacco and all kinds of different stuff that Southern people did, and he was not going to roll around on that mat, so he had his special pink mat that we would put on there. Just that pink mat coming to the ring drew a reaction from the crowd. Just that pink mat being put on the ring drew a reaction from the people, and when Terry would come out and prance around and have the Beast spray the mat with his special perfume to make sure that he didn't get any blemishes on his skin from wrestling on the mat, it was true heat, and people come to see him get bloodied up on that pink mat. Terry was quite the character. We lost Terry this past year, and he had battled some health problems for a long time. You know, he was a lifelong wrestling fan. Grew up in the Louisville, Kentucky area. Used to go to the Louisville Gardens to see Memphis wrestling on Tuesday nights, and he never dreamed of being a professional wrestler. Never thought that he would ever be involved in professional wrestling. When he was a teenager, he saw the movie Hairspray, and he said that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to be a hairstylist and have all these women chasing after him and all this different stuff. But in reality, he married his high school sweetheart right out of high school. Very young in age, he was a married man with two children. He went to barber school, then to stylist school. He became one of the top stylists in Louisville. After his separation from his wife, he moved to Nashville, where some doors opened up for him. And Terry became a hairstylist to many of the top country music acts of the mid-1980s. He had met one of the top managers of country music artists there in Nashville, who hired him to do the stylist for people like Marty Stewart, Loretta Lynn, and a few other big-time stars in the 80s. He had his own hair shop there in Nashville, where one day a man walked in needing to get a trim and get a hair dye, and that man was Bill Dundee. And he began to talk to Terry, and Terry was talking to him about being a fan, and next thing you know, and as Terry told me, he doesn't know if Bill talked him into coming to the school or he talked Bill into letting him come to the school. But he went and trained with Bill Dundee to start his professional career. After he finished his training there, he would go on to wrestle on outlaw shows in northern Alabama and then go to Kentucky and wrestle for Dale Mann all across the state, learning his craft, getting seasoned before Bill brought him to a promotion with TV. And then he came to Knoxville and did a couple of televisions for Continental and Ron Fuller's USA. And then in the early part of 1989, Dundee gave him and Mark Goulin a break as Beauty and the Beast, the tag team. And you had this big, mean, ugly guy with this different way of speaking. And then you had the Beauty, Terry Garvin, and Dundee added the pink mat to him because he had seen it from the original Terry Garvin many years ago. Terry probably, if he would have started a few years younger, would have had a much longer run in professional wrestling, but he got in as the territories were starting to die out, but he still did very well for himself in Memphis, in Continental, and in World Class, and then the USWA there in Dallas, feuded with the Von Erichs, feuded with Adrian Street, feuded with Bill Dundee in his time in wrestling, did very well for himself while he was in the profession. And Terry was always a character. Long before he got into wrestling, he was working the gimmick, as we call it, because he found out once he moved to Nashville, as he told me, nobody wanted a straight hairstylist if they were a man. So he started working on this persona of himself to where he was the Beauty without being called the Beauty, where he would act gay for his clients, and they were happy about it, and he was happy about it because he was making the money with it. And then when he got into wrestling, he just carried it over there into being the Beauty, Terry Garvin. You know, one of the things I talked about here earlier, these characters were entertaining. They were kind of like walking, talking cartoons, and they could tell you stories and entertain you and mesmerize you. And a few years ago, I had Terry on another podcast when I was sitting in for Michael Norris, and I've got some audio clips here that I want to play for you. As Terry tells you the story of his first road trip with Kevin Von Erich, and then he's going to tell you the story of Beauty and the Beast in their first match with Kerry and Kevin in the famed Sportatorium there in Dallas, Texas. So let's go back a few years here and listen to Terry Garvin tell you the stories of the Von Erichs and his first meetings with them.
A couple of real quick stories, okay? Kevin and I made a road trip one time. Just he and I, he called me, said, Beauty, you know, we're not flying up to do this road trip. It was like 10 days, and we were driving from town to town. We started from Dallas. We went to OKC and then Tulsa, all the way up to Columbia, Missouri, you know, where Mizzou. Yeah. And then made a loop back around. And he said, I'd like to go with you and ride with you. And I said, that's cool. He said, anybody, do you have a plan on going with anyone? And I said, well, I hadn't thought about it. And he said, don't. Just you and me. We'll split everything, and we'll split the hotel and all, and I'll buy the gas. I said, okay, that's cool, Kev. I'll enjoy that, because we hadn't been around each other a lot. Kerry and I had. But we're buzzing along about 70 miles an hour. We're not on the interstate, but we're on a really nice road. And Kev says, pull over, Beauty, pull over. Now, picture this, okay? It's a nice day, and it's summertime. But it's not hot. It may have been like May. And he said, pull over. Well, I thought he had to go to the bathroom, right? And he had no shoes on, nothing but a pair of shorts on, no shirt, anything. He jumps, throws the door open, flies out, and jumps a ditch out into the field, you know, and I'm thinking, man, why is he going way over there to use the restroom? You know, he must really have to go and whatever. Well, he freaking climbs an oak tree like a monkey. He wanted to stop the car to climb this tree. And I'm standing there watching him, you know. Well, he's 10 feet up. Well, he's 20 feet up. Wow, he's 30 feet up there. And then it was running through my mind, if he falls, he's going to break his neck. And what in the world am I going to tell Fritz?
Meditation will make you do crazy things.
And you know, that don't surprise me at all. That does not come as a great shock to me.
He was straight as an arrow. He was straight as an arrow that trip. He may have taken something to sleep, okay? But we went to eat, had normal conversations. We would go to building, we wrestled against each other, we had great matches. Then we
I'm
get
worried
something
about this tree. I'm still on this tree. Why
okay.
did he say
right.
he went up this tree?
Yeah.
Why did he say he went up the tree?
Because he likes to climb trees, man. That's a crazy question. I'm sorry, I couldn't refuse that.
How long did he stay up that tree? That's the question, too.
Well, long enough to look around and, you know, do the Gilligan's Island thing, and long enough for me to eat a sandwich and use the restroom and drink a Coke, so that ought to take something.
If he was riding with me, he'd have been up there long enough to need another ride. The guy decided to leave him.
Now, you have to remember, they were paying the checks, too, now. the first time I met Kev, this is a good one. You'll enjoy this, okay? Beauty and the Beast were wrestling Kevin and Carrie. And I've told this story 100 times, but, you know, back then you didn't talk about anything. You know, today I've seen... last show I went to, I think, was in 2000, okay, here in Louisville. My brother wanted some tickets, took him in, and Michael hooked us up, of course. Enjoyed seeing Glenn and Mark and Cactus and, you know, even Rock. But Kevin and Carrie, back then all you did was, this is the finish. Everything else you called in the ring. And you knew what spots that guys, you know, did, so you didn't have to call them beforehand, okay? I watched Kurt Angle here in Louisville go over the end of the match in his head, and it was like 10 minutes long. And I thought, my Lord, if the Von Erichs had to do that. Well, but anyway, the end of the match was...
how long was their attention span in the ring? Did they? Because when you get done, we're going to talk about when he came to John City. Me and you talked about this before.
Okay. Their attention span in the ring was this. Kevin didn't like to sell, number one. Okay? You had to beat him down. I mean, if you had a gun and shot him in the head, he would have made a hot tag or possibly a hot comeback and then tag, okay? But Kerry would sell. There was a difference there. Well, the finish of this match was we get big heat on Kev, and Kerry makes the tag, and we all fight outside the ring and count out. Well, Kev was a little bit sleepy that night, And he comes up to me and asked me, man, I'm really tired. Do you have anything that might wake me up? And I said, what, coffee? what do you want? No, never mind. Never met him before. He didn't even know my name. We get in the ring, and we beat him within an inch of his life, and he didn't fight back. And I thought, man, everything I've heard about this guy is totally wrong. What the heck? So I'm doing the spot, and I snap Miriam in the middle. I said, I'm going to come off the second rope with a fist move, tag carry, give him the hot tag. So here I come off the ropes, and he just lays there. Well, I crushed his skull with my freaking hand. I thought I broke my hand. I thought, oh, my, okay, I think I killed him. So I pick him up. I said, you okay? Yeah. I said, okay, look, I'm going to come out of the top rope with an elbow. Tag carry, move. He didn't move. Okay. And I mean, it's a wonder they didn't have to bring a defibrillator in and pump his chest back up, because that's how hard I hit him. I said, oh, my God, we're going to try this one last time. And by this time I'd made up my mind I was going to kill him. I said, I'm going to give you a knee, but I'm coming off the top rope to do it. So you either move or get your head crushed, okay? And Kerry realized what was going on. So I jump off the top rope. Kerry comes flying in from the corner and puts a claw on me in midair. That's how we went home. True story.
There you hear the art of storytelling, something that is lost now along the young wrestlers. They don't entertain each other in the dressing room or in the car like years gone by. They're not storytelling. They're not working on stories. They're not working on stuff that will help them in front of the camera. If you're a great storyteller in the dressing room, or you're a great storyteller in the car, or you're a great storyteller, period, then you're going to be a great interview, or as they call it now, a promo. And it's a lost art that I see that we're losing more and more every year, because guys just have not lived the lives of wrestlers past. And also want to mention right there, you heard on that audio clip, my good friend Bobby Simmons and the great Jerry Oates, who were sitting in with me on that podcast, as Terry recalled his first meetings with the Von Erichs. Now, the second wrestler I want to talk to about today was a guy that grew up only a couple hours north of me, who watched the same kind of wrestling I grew up on, who loved professional wrestling ever since he was a little kid, used to go to the matches there in Kentucky. And I'm talking about Billy Joe Travis, the Sweet Music Man, or as he referred to himself, Billy. He always talked in third person. Billy was a true cartoon. He would call you on the phone, Billy here, knock on the door, let Billy in. Be driving down the road, he'd say, boy, Billy would be happy if you pull over and let him get a sandwich. He was always entertaining you in the car, in the dressing room, wherever you was at. Billy come up in the business a hard way. He's trained with Dale Mann, working on Dale Mann's farm during the day, then training at night, working, wrestling in Dale's towns when he was running for very little money. He left Dale with Spike Huber to go to St. Louis to do televisions there in St. Louis. Ended up getting a job with the WWF right then and there at a young age. Wrestled his enhancement talent, underneath talent for the WWF early on in the expansion of their nationwide expansion when Vince McMahon Jr. took over. Billy learned from great people inside and outside the ring. He knew he was a ring general, and he knew how to entertain you on the road or in the dressing room. You know, you'd look over in the car, be driving, look over, and there he would be with his Sling Blade face on. And he would do the voice of Sling Blade from the movie. He could do it perfect. He'd always get a laugh or a pop out of the boys. He always was into something. Every day that you traveled with Billy Travis, you never knew what was coming next. And you never knew where you would end up before that day was over with. If you were to stop at a restaurant during the day on the road, and Billy told you to go before him to get your food, then you knew Billy was going to really mess with the people that worked there. But if he went before you, we're going to eat, get out of there, get back on the road. One time in Jackson, Tennessee, we pulled into McDonald's right at lunchtime. And we go in, and Billy tells us to get the food. So we go and get our food, and then Billy gets up to the cashier, and he says, "Darling, Billy didn't bring his glasses today, and he can't see the menu, and Billy really doesn't know what he wants. Could you help me out?" And she would say, "Oh, yes. Could you read it to me?" And she'd say, "What part?" "The whole menu. Billy'd like to make up his mind what he would want to eat." He held the line up for several minutes. People on their lunch break from their job. People come off the interstate wanting to get back on the interstate to go wherever they were going. But Billy had no time for them. He was going to entertain the boys that were with him, and he was going to entertain himself. He got this girl to read each and every item on the menu. And then when he got down and she got finished, he said, "You know what? Billy ate at McDonald's yesterday. Billy thinks he'll go across the street to Burger King for lunch. Thank you." That was Billy Travis. He would mess with people, not in a bad way, you know, playful way. He would entertain himself when no one else was around to entertain him. He always had some kind of story. He always had something. He was a big fan of Jerry Clower, and he had memorized all of Jerry Clower's stories, and Billy would do them in the car for you. He would watch Archie Bunker. He was the first person that I knew that would had a whole series, a whole television series where he could watch it. He had every All in the Family on VHS and would watch them all the time. He was always out to entertain himself when nobody else was around. And one of the things that he's known for, and one of the things that drove me crazy traveling with him as much as I did, was him singing. If you know Billy from Dallas or Memphis Wrestling, you saw the Sweet Music Man where he was carrying the guitar, as he called it, and he would sing, and I mean sing horrible. He learned how to sing horrible by practicing that in the car. He didn't care if you had heard it. He didn't care if you've heard it 100 times. He was going to work on it again. When Billy wasn't working on his awful singing, he was working on getting your name wrong. He got everyone's name wrong that he liked. Like, he always called me Bob James. He would call Bulldog Reigns Bullfrog Brains. I remember one day at TV, a guy came up to him and he said, "Billy, you never get my name wrong." And Billy looked right at him and he said, "That's because Billy doesn't like you." And he didn't care if you liked him either. That was just Billy. Billy could get on your last nerve. He could make you just about as mad as anybody that you possibly could ever meet in your life. And sometimes if he knew he was getting on your nerves, he would just make it even worse because he would go to a whole nother level. But like another guy I'm going to talk about here in a few minutes, you couldn't stay mad at the guy. You liked him so much. You got along with him so much. You know, Billy had his troubles, and he had some legal troubles, and he had demons that he dealt with that many of us in the profession have over the years. But Billy was a great guy. Billy was a friend of mine for many years, and I talked to Billy not long before he passed away. He wrestled for me here in East Tennessee for Southern States Wrestling, did some TVs for me over the years. He would stay with me when he would come down here, and he got to know my family, and my family knew him, and everybody liked him, and he liked my family. And Billy's one of the guys that I really miss that I traveled with over the years. You know, I'd love to have one more trip with him with his bad singing and his nicknames and third person. It would be something if we could just go back and do it all over again. I got an audio clip of Billy that I want to play for you from 1997 at the casino in Crothersville, Missouri. Somehow, Dutch Mantel talked the casino into booking Billy in a concert there after the wrestling matches in a different part of the casino. He went into one of the bars and restaurants and had a concert. Here's about 2 minutes of the concert with Billy Travis from Crothersville, Missouri. Ooh,
with you. No one else will do. In your eyes, they tell me how. All right. I told her what's wrong with me. I'm shaking like a leaf on a fallen tree. Well, my hands are shaking and my knees are weak. I can't see the stand on my own two feet. I'm proud to see she's my body's up. I'm in love. I'm all shook up. Oh,
you heard Billy Travis singing at a casino in Caruthersville, Missouri, and I got to give credit where credit is due right here this week, as when I announced I was going to start doing a little podcast again, Randy Hale said, you will never be able to do a 30-minute podcast because you're too long-winded and you have too many stories to tell. Well, I am doing a 30-minute podcast as far as that part goes, but Randy was right because I had a third person picked out to talk about today that I'm not going to get the time to do it, and that is Nature Boy Buddy Landale, my friend of many years, who I traveled hundreds of thousands of miles with across the South, the Midwest, and the Mid-South. So what I'm going to do right here next week is I'm just going to dedicate as much of the program as I can telling Buddy Landale stories and educating you a little bit on Buddy's background and career. So thank you for listening to this week. Please follow me on Twitter if you have not already, at King of Kingsport. Like my Facebook page, facebook.com/ProWrestlerBoJames. Also have a Do You Want to Be a Wrestler Kid Facebook page. Check that out. KingofKingsport.com. Go over there and check out the DVDs. Check out my books that I have on sale. Their autographed copies are also at Amazon and Amazon Kindle. But right now, if you buy something off of the website, my personal website, kingofkingsport.com, that money is going for the research to finish the book that I have been working on many years about the rise, the fall, and the destruction of Southeastern Championship Wrestling. If you're a fan of the Studcast, and you've heard Ron Fuller mention me on there for helping him with a lot of the stuff that he's using for his research there. Me and my friend of many years, Al Getz, put a lot of time and effort into making sure that this is told correctly. We have Knoxville. We have Corbin, Kentucky. Bluefield, West Virginia. We have Harlan, Kentucky. And a few other spot shows, but we're now getting down to Johnson City, which was the Tuesday night town for Southeastern Wrestling. And none of the Johnson City papers are digitalized, and we're having to go and sit in the library. There is a cost to getting the ads and getting all that stuff done. So anything you buy at the kingofkingsport.com right now goes to help the research to finish this book that we hope to release on Black Friday this year. And you're going to be blown away because I've talked to Ronnie Garvin. I talked to Ron and Don Wright. I talked to Les Thatcher, Mac McMurray. And for the last several months, I've been talking with Ron Fuller, who's been helping me a lot with the book, too. So it's going to be a complete look at 1970s East Tennessee wrestling, the War of 79 that's made headlines here lately. But did you know there was a War of 73 before Ron Fuller ever got here? Ron Wright and Jim Crockett Promotions against Roy Welch and Nick Gulas. You'll learn all about that in the book. You'll learn all about Black Jack Mulligan and Ric Flair buying the Southeastern Territory, how long it lasted, who their stars were, and what they did here. It's going to be a fascinating read for you. We have already got so much work finished about the book, but so much left to do, and that is our summer project to hammer is down. We're going to get this thing out this year. So you think the Knoxville Five was something? Let me tell you, that's only a small part of the history of Southeastern Wrestling right here out of Knoxville, Tennessee. Also, check out the Southern States Wrestling Network. That's southernstateswrestlingnetwork.pivotshare.com. Start your 7-day free trial right now. Only $4.99 a month. See people like Tracy Smothers, Sherry Martel, The Rock and Roll Express, yours truly, Jimmy Golden, Robert Fuller, Sabu, so many more. Handsome Jimmy Valiant, Billy Joe Travis that we talked about here today is on there. New footage goes up each and every week. 28 years and growing of memories, legends, stars in action. $4.99 a month. You will love it. I guarantee it. If you enjoyed this program this week and this podcast, like it, share it, let people know about it. If you didn't like it, keep your mouth shut and your fingers still, because we're trying to get this thing over. Thank you for listening here. Be right back here next week, and we're going to talk about Nature Boys, Buddy Landale. Until next week, God bless each and every one of you for listening.